Greetings, and welcome to The Thirsty Mage, the podcast that leaves the house so rarely these days that it feels like awakening from a multi-year slumber. I'm your host and community manager for the Thirsty Mage Video Game Club, David Lloyd. And this week we are joined by the fine gentlemen of the Talk Nintendo podcast in a playthrough of Crystalis, the SNK-developed RPG currently available in the Nintendo Online service, and also in the SNK collection. Before introductions, I just want to remind everyone that for more details on how you can be a part of the decision-making process about what we cover on the podcast, or get access to free games, both new and old, join us on the Thirsty Mage Discord server, or head on over to patreon.com/thethirstymage for more details. And joining us tonight is the architect for this particular episode, and he joins us from the western side of the continent, NWR Reviews editor, Jordan Rudick.
So I was going to make a joke about how one of our guests' football teams is 0-5, and my football team is 5-0. But I just learned that his fantasy team is 5-0, and mine is not even close to that. So maybe the joke's on me in the end.
The fantasy team really is the only one that actually has any bearing in reality, right? I mean, he's making the choices. I mean, he's affecting
that
fantasy
team. I mean, if the Seahawks win, I'm not going to get any money out of that. The players might have some incentives to, you know, in their contracts, and they'll get money from winning. But if I win in fantasy, I can get money. So, yeah, well, at the end of the day, I would rather my fantasy team do well than an actual NFL team. But you know,
exactly. Spoken like a guy who's seen a Super Bowl victory within the last decade.
Very true. I should have been two. But
yeah, should have been. Yeah, freaking Patriots.
Casey. Let me give you
Pete Carroll.
Let me give you a hypothetical. Would you rather win $1,000 every year for the past 10 years, or have a Jets Super Bowl victory once in the last 10 years?
Probably the Jets Super Bowl, dude.
Wow.
Because
that's
worth 10 grand. It's way that's easier
amazing.
To get $1,000.
10,000 is easier
than
to get 10 grand?
Yeah, probably. Then the Jets winning the Super Bowl, dude? Yeah, probably.
Because if you take into account the money that people would have given you as well for making that choice. I mean, if that's part of the deal, you know. If that's part of the monkey's paw here.
I guess we'll never know.
And the two gentlemen that you just heard us is, we'll start with the first joining us, the action RPG fan and the better half of the Talk Nintendo podcast, Mr. Casey Gibson.
Hello, almost said adios. I was going to say, actually, it's funny that you'd mention all that fantasy stuff, because a large part in why my fantasy team is actually doing so well is because of your Seattle Seahawks.
Mm, yes.
And Russell Wilson and Carson doing the thing for me.
Well, I'll finish introductions by asking my final guest if this sounds any less foreign to him than it does to me. He's the other half of the Talk Nintendo podcast and our favorite creative director from a 2E LLC, Mr. Perry Burkham.
Yeah, hello. I thought you'd use the, and speaking of adapting to the talent that we have, and then I thought then you'd bring me in, but...
Unfortunately, we're stuck with Jerry.
I like to hear people talking about something they're passionate about, but it's kind of boring, but it's also fun. So, you know,
we were going to talk about fried chicken, or were we going to talk about football?
David, if
you want to talk about hockey right now, we can start talking about hockey, and then Perry's going to dip off.
You know what's
fast.
Crazy, guys, yeah. Is you missed out. We had this whole segment. It was like a whole segment. At the beginning of the show, of our show, of this you guys are hosted on this one, that last sentence didn't make any sense. But we had this big, huge segment about chicken and waffles, fried chicken and waffles, and about syrup and syrup management and everything. And it's funny because it had nothing to do with the Canadian boys at all. So
this is officially going to be we're changing the episode title from Crystalis to Chicken and Waffles Part 2. Because I have some thoughts, obviously. Like,
the
biggest problem was that I didn't come across chicken and waffles until, you know, probably my late 20s or something like that. But if I had known about chicken and waffles,
me too, buddy.
You know, when I was a kid or when I was a teenager or something, I mean, it would have been all over. Like, I would have had all the diabetes, all the, hyper obesity. It would have been a big problem for me. Like,
I discovered chicken and waffles already having diabetes and hyper obesity. So just imagine where I'm at.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know which is worse, Perry. I don't know which is worse.
I say, Jordan, wait until you discover real coffee, man. Woo! It's going to knock your socks off.
Oh, yeah. Well, it actually will.
I'll talk about real coffee when we get to the drink portion. But, yeah. Casey, my whole university time was fueled by nothing but coffee. Like, and I still slept through my classes. So what does that tell you? Regular caffeine wasn't doing it for me anymore than decaf. So.
Hmm. Well, why don't you kick off this episode's drink section here?
Sure. So I tweeted about it, but I think it's something I mentioned on last week's episode about getting free coffee. So I guess the trick is to go to Tim Hortons around 10 a.m., which is when they presumably run out of decaf or only have a little bit, and I'll end up getting a free coffee every time. So my mom came to pick up my oldest son to take him to the park and stuff today. I was at home with my youngest. And so she went to Tim Hortons to get me a coffee. And she said the same thing happened to her. So she went, it was about 9:45, 10 o'clock. She went to go get me a large coffee. They didn't have enough for a large. So they gave her a medium, didn't charge her. They did charge her today, but they also gave her a coupon for a free coffee as well. So this is my little, I hate to call it a scam. Like I really do want the bigger coffee, but every time I go to Tim Hortons, if it's 10 o'clock, they probably won't have enough for an extra large decaf, which is what I usually order. And by the time I get to the front, they'll give me a small, a medium, or a large coffee and won't charge me. And then I'll just walk out, drive away with my free coffee. So that's my little thing, my update on that little situation with the Tim Hortons coffees. However, this evening,
freaking Tim.
Yeah, I know. It probably wouldn't be any better at McDonald's. Starbucks is actually the most consistent for having the coffees that I want. And I do have another Starbucks tonight. They've really, I've really become a slave to their Starbucks app, because every day or every few days they've got a new offer where if you go X amount of times, you'll get all these bonus points. Or if you order like a latte and then a protein box and a breakfast sandwich, you'll get like 100 points. And the points are pretty, it's a pretty good ratio of points you collect to what you can spend them on. I've been using the points to get like pumpkin bread or banana bread, either for me or for the kids. But I've got a pumpkin spice. Sorry, I'll give you the whole drink name. Decaf soy pumpkin, venti decaf soy pumpkin spice frappuccino. And it's not bad. I prefer the latte version, I think. But I don't know. I was feeling really tired before we started recording. I was kind of nodding off, putting my kids to bed, and I needed something sweet to wake me up. So I need something sweet all the time. But yeah, I got the pumpkin spice frappuccino. It's not bad. I think I prefer the latte form. But one of the reasons why I got a frappuccino, when it's getting cold here and it's 7:30 at night when I got it, the app got me again. I have to order four things to get like 100 points. One of the things is a frappuccino. So I got my frappuccino that the app.
You're just another cog in their machine.
I am.
Oh, yeah, dude. They've got you right where they want you.
They have. It's killing. This app is killing me.
It sounds like Starbucks is the mobile games of the coffee industry.
So I just want to make sure, though. They had a box for you to check that was a decaf soy vente pumpkin spice frappuccino. Is that what you said?
Obviously,
that's one of the boxes.
It's not that specific. So I'm looking at the app right now. Collect 90 stars. I've got 5 more days. I've got to get 4 things. I need one latte, any latte. I need a classic chai tea latte, which is good because my wife drinks those. So that's 2. I need any frappuccino blended beverage and any protein box. So if I get those 4 things, I'll get 90 points. And I've done 2 already. I've done the.
But tell us about these points.
Frappuccino. Sure.
Well, then you could probably use those to get free coffee in the future.
Give us how much the points. How much does it take
to get? I'll tell you right now. Here's the thing to do. So I figured
8
out
8 million, and you get a small coffee.
That's right. I figured out the way to game the system is they kept changing what points were worth. So what it is right now, every dollar you spend, you get 2 points. The points are called stars. So every dollar you spend, you get 2 stars. At 50 stars, you can cash it in for like a bakery item. So like I said, a pumpkin bread or a banana bread or something, or a cookie or something like that. So I cash in 50 stars, which I would get by spending $25. And that's just straight up. That's no bonus points, right? But I'm always getting bonus points. So I spend $25. I get 50 stars. And I cash in the 50 stars for a $3 pumpkin bread. Okay? So it's like spending $25 and getting $3 back. So that's better than 10%. I mean, that's pretty good, right? So it's to get 10% back. Yeah, so to get that, and again, not including any bonus points that I'm getting, which I usually do, it's a pretty good offer. I don't think you can find many restaurants or fast food places where their reward program is giving you like almost 10% back. So it's a good one, and they've got me in their claws. I'm trying to cut back. We're trying to save up a little bit of money heading into next year.
They're like, we can fix that problem.
the day I say I'm saving money, and then they have come up with some crazy offer.
There's a guy that works for Starbucks who's assigned to the Jordan Rudek account. Like, just like, work frankly, on this algorithm. We got this guy in our crosshairs.
I wouldn't want to go back and see, especially 2020, at the end of this year. Here's what I'll do. Well, whatever our final crossover episode is of the year, I'm going to go through and I'm going to calculate how much I spent at Starbucks, and we can place bets. You guys can place bets on how much money do you think I spent at Starbucks this year, because I think it's a fairly high number, and I'm definitely going to be embarrassed by it, so stay tuned for that.
Considering a normal coffee costs like $4 plus,
I'm not getting any normal coffees. Everything I get is $6 plus, so...
Jeez.
Canadian dollars.
I tell you, that is true, yeah. Folgers, man. I get like a big $10 thing and it lasts me weeks.
Yeah, but then you break your coffee pot once a month, so that costs you $40-$30 every few weeks.
Dude, I wish I'd break this coffee pot. It doesn't hold a candle to my old one.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Sad times.
You have a name for your coffee pots?
No.
Oh, I wish you did.
I have not named it.
He kills them too quickly to name them.
Well, the last one was Mr. Coffee, because that was the brand. Uh-huh. So you can call it Mr. Coffee. This one, though.
You should name it, like, I figure you would name it like a Jets coach.
Why would I want to do that?
Because then you'd break it.
Well, does either Perry or Casey want to jump in with a...
Well, you already know what I'm
beverage?
Drinking.
Good old H2O.
Good old fashioned H2O. You know, it might have been a coffee or something a little more crazy, but you know, we have to conform for the one West Coaster on the podcast and these things in the middle of the night. So,
that's
thanks
Jordan.
Thanks a lot, Perry. Thanks a lot, Perry.
Yeah, not you, Jer.
Dude, West. I can't believe. I know, isn't that funny? Like with, like you know, I can deal with the East Coasters, but like the West Coasters, it's crazy how different the time. What time is it? Is it 8:30 for you?
It's 8:30, yeah.
Good land. You know it's 11:30 for the other folks on this podcast. It's 10:30 for me. It's not too bad for me, but
10:30 is not too bad. Yeah, Perry and I are good. So if you guys want to knock off, go to sleep early. Perry and I'll just finish the podcast.
Yeah, we can talk chicken waffles.
I'll see you guys later. Yeah, if they're chicken and waffles, that might be a different story.
Dude, chicken and waffles, amazing. I'm drinking a Diet A&W root beer. And I think we've thoroughly discussed my obsession with cream soda. It's back. We're back in another cream soda drought. I've been in another drought for like 2 months. I think I bought it all.
You need to talk to the manager at Costco.
I do. That's true. You know what? And I do know a manager of a Costco. I teach his kids music. So
dude,
maybe
you've got the ins.
I know,
dude. Just tell them like I need to know when this is coming in, at least a week before, and you can get down there and buy them all.
Well, I'll just have them order it for me. You know,
yeah. Can you just send it to
and
my
then,
house?
And then like there's like a truckload anyway. But yeah, I'll settle with the root beer. The thing about the root beer is it's really root beer is so sweet, really sweet. In cream soda, it's sweet, but it's not as sweet as root beer, and so. I don't like it as much, but I do like root beer, and it's nice because there's no caffeine, so like before bed and stuff, it doesn't keep you up or anything. So,
I think if you get crushed cream soda, the pink one, that could be really, really sweet. Mm. I'm not saying like,
oh,
we
for
would
sure
lean in that direction or prefer
oh,
that.
Well, it's got to be
that
diet.
That one can be quite sweet.
Mm. Yeah, I love cream soda. That's like one of my favorites. But anywho.
Yeah. Well, I will finish it up with, as usual, the only one drinking beer. But it's October, so I have to drink a German beer. And I have Hefeweizen. From it's not from Germany though. It's from Quebec, but it's in the spirit of a German beer from
it's an imposter.
Hoffman. Yeah. Proudly made in Quebec, but it's a Hefeweizen, or however you pronounce it. it wouldn't be a thirsty mage if I didn't butcher somebody's language.
And so it wouldn't be a thirsty mage if I didn't try to correct you. I think it's Hefeweizen. I know I've told you in German the W's or V sounds right.
I'm told lots of things. When you have two kids, your brain doesn't intake and hold the information as well as in my youth. So.
There's no question about that. When you said October and you've got like a beer for October, I thought for sure you were going to say pumpkin something.
No, but I did have a good laugh at the SNL this week that had, they were talking about the pumpkin beer and they had people from Boston drinking it, and they had like the stereotypical Boston guy flip out when he started drinking the pumpkin beer.
Can't trust those mass holes, man.
So I thought that was pretty funny because I don't know if I've had pumpkin beer or not before, but I wouldn't be against it. I like to try any kind of beer. I'll drink it as long as it's got alcohol in it. Well, it wouldn't be a crossover episode if we didn't spend a good chunk of time on the drinks and then the food. So now that we're 20 minutes in, it's time to talk about the game. So this week we played Crystallis, the SNK classic from back in 1990. Came out on the original Nintendo, and I think we all played it on the Switch, some version of it. I think most of us probably played on the Nintendo Online service. I believe Jordan played on the yep. SNK collection.
I did, yeah. I tried both, but for reasons I'll mention later, I think the SNK collection one's a little better, a little more accessible.
Yeah, so, and like I said early on, Jordan had suggested this, and I'm curious if there was anything in particular about this game that made you think, I want to play this.
Yeah, so I think I'll give you something very, very specific. Just because it's maybe a little bit of an interesting anecdote. So I used to listen to something called 8-Bit Radio, which was put on by, I think it's through IGN, and Damon Hatfield would host this 8-Bit Radio, kind of like a podcast, where they would play a bunch of, you know, classic kind of NES songs, maybe some arcade music as well. But I think they only did like 5 or 6 episodes or something like that. They were like special kind of one-off podcasts. But I remember distinctly one of the episodes talking about music from Crystallis, and I could never get this music out of my head. The music was so good. I think this game has a really, really awesome soundtrack. Mm-hmm. No matter what you think of the gameplay, which maybe hasn't aged as well as some others from the NES era, I think the soundtrack is still banging. And I was listening to it a couple days ago, just on its own, and I, you know, happily throw tracks from this song into playlists, or I don't know if it's on Spotify. I should look at that, but just a YouTube music playlist, and yeah, I guess that's the kind of funny thing about this game is I knew about the music first, probably before I'd ever played the game. I don't remember playing it as a kid. It did come out in 1990, if I'm not mistaken, which was, again, a little bit later of an NES game, kind of the middle of the console's lifespan, I suppose. But yeah, I don't remember playing it as a kid, but the music, when I first heard that through 8-Bit Radio, it struck me as like, wow, yeah, this is awesome. Like, I love this stuff.
That's definitely what stood out to me the most, especially earlier on. Like, man, this soundtrack sort of slaps, you know?
Definitely.
Yeah. So, what did you guys think of the actual game, Perry? Like, what are your generalized thoughts on playing an old game like this in 2020.
I mean, it's kind of crazy. I mean, it seems like my very first thoughts were like, this seems like, you know, it's super impressive mm-hmm. for NES. You know, super, like when you compare, I mean, it seems like a late console, almost it's Super Nintendo. The systems are, you know, the menu systems are actually pretty advanced. The, you know, the fighting, the effects, you know, the graphics, you know, like, yeah, the first cutscenes and the beautiful...
A story.
yeah, the story. I mean, just everything about it was like, wow, this is... And honestly, I guess this is SNK.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't really know anything too much about... And that's, you know, that's something that I'm not a big, huge fan of. Not that... that makes it sound like I don't like it. It just means I don't know anything about SNK too much. But, you know, it is kind of like out of left field. But I, you know, the feeling of it, I mean, it's definitely, you know, totally gave me Secret of Mana vibes, you know, this game. And so it definitely, there's something cool and amazing about the production, but definitely the gameplay is just like very non-Tendo.
You know, SNK is funny because they made a lot of arcade games, a lot of shooters, beat-em-ups, a lot of like military themed games, beat 'em ups too. So to make an RPG like this, it feels like it's kind of out of left field, at least for games that they made that came over here. I can't think of any that were like this one. But yeah, a lot of beat 'em ups. I think of things like Ikari Warriors and just other kind of vertical and horizontal shmups that they did. I guess that maybe that's what makes this game unique as well, that it was something different from that company that had put out all these traditional arcade classic games. I don't know that Crystallis is a game you would play in the arcade, right? Like, it's very much like a very, very lengthy adventure. You know, it seems to borrow heavily from games like The Adventure of Link, Zelda 2, the original Zelda as well. David, you in the notes, you compared it to something like Ys, and I think that, you know, with the combat and the progression mechanics, absolutely.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know for me, when I jumped in there too, I was like, all right, obviously being top down, right? And an NES game, you sort of get those Zelda vibes, especially as you're, mm-hmm. you know, you're using a sword, and if you charge up the sword, it shoots out a beam, almost as if, you know, sort of like when you get the Master Sword, you know, I guess that's in, whatchamacallit, you know, when you get the full hearts and stuff, and you actually blast out the sword. So definitely felt like mm-hmm. that. And then again, like you said, sort of with the Adventures of Link, you know, you're leveling up, you're gaining experience. So that was my first opinion. Like, okay, it sort of is like a mix of these two games. And yeah, I think the production value, like I said, the story, you know, it's got a story for, you know, NES games. Usually, you know, sort of. Like, oh, they give you a little, like, hey, this is it, and sort of go out there. But this one seems a little more fleshed out. You know, like Perry said, it's got, like, these menus and stuff, which are, you know, a bunch of things going on, but they can sort of be a little clunky almost, especially when you, like, mm-hmm. like equip, like, a magic, and it's like, oh, is it equipped or is it not? Like, I don't know, a little weird. Obviously, a game from 1990, so you don't exactly expect everything to be perfect, but yeah, the gameplay itself I felt like wasn't terrible, but it wasn't, you know, what I would say is the game's strong suit, which, you know, for me seemed to be more, like I said, the production, like the music is really great and the visuals are cool, but yeah, I mean, I don't know, I felt like, you know, you had to do a little grinding, which, you know, like, oh, gonna
sure.
kill some enemies, like go up a screen, come right back down a screen, kill some more enemies, you know, which is it, you know, I don't mind grinding, but, you know, it's a pretty simple battle system, so it's not necessarily the most fun thing.
Well, and it's not just the simpleness of the system, it's just the not clunky, just like the jankiness, I don't know, of the battles that, you know.
It's a little bit off, right? Yeah. Like the hit detection or the button, the input timing or
yeah,
something like
I mean,
that. It's a little, it feels a little bit off.
To me, it's kind of like you can see that in that I'm sure Nintendo wasn't the first, but just the way that, like, even on the original Zelda, that sword swipe feels, you know, mm-hmm. and then like Link to the Past and it just feels great. And it's just, you know, this directional. But what's cool is the charge attack and everything is really cool. It can, you know, it feels cool. But still.
I think it's neat to have all the different swords too, right? That you collect different elemental swords in the game, and you use those because they'll do different amounts of damage, or a lot of enemies will be invulnerable to one or two of the swords, and so you have to equip a different one. Like, I think that's cool that, like, throughout the game, you're having to go back to the different swords based on enemies' weak points, right? I think that's a cool thing that you hadn't really seen. I can't think of another NES game that's like that, where you're switching between different primary weapons to kill things. Again, a little bit of a Zelda trope, but the charging up of the attacks, the equipping the orbs to make the attacks make the sword stronger, and just all the different types. I think it's taking something from Zelda 1 even further, and I applaud it for that. Perry, you mentioned a comparison to Secret of Mana, and I think that's, in the villages in particular, I think that's very, very appropriate. Like, the buildings, the shops, and everything, they look exactly like Secret of Mana.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it's not even really subtle. Not that one company is copying the other one or something, but the resemblance is uncanny, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like, the flow of movement and talking and mm-hmm. everything just kind of feels very similar as well.
Agreed.
Yeah, like, for me, it seemed more like a game I would have enjoyed back then, like when I was a kid back in 1990, like, especially when you're kind of, you've got more time, because one of the things that I got frustrated with is I felt like I don't have as much patience as I used to. So I kept going to a guide, like, absolutely. What am I supposed to be doing? Where am I going? And it didn't mm-hmm. feel very intuitive, a lot of the stuff that you're supposed to do. Some of those we'll get into later, but it felt like one of those games where you're kind of just like, you know, spend a lot of time just walking around and you'll accidentally find where you need to go, or you'll figure it out eventually. It's one of those types of games, which back then I think
it's Metroidvania, you know?
Yeah, it was more,
I mean, that the essence of that, you know?
Yeah.
Just NES game.
Yeah.
You know,
more fun back in 1990, maybe not so much in 2020. And then it even got me thinking, it's like, you know, I don't recall knowing about Crystalis. Like, I know I don't follow SNK all that much, but I kind of thought you'd hear a little bit more about the game, and I was like, well, what was I playing back then? And then to find out that it was released in the US anyway, it was released in the same year as Super Mario Brothers 3, Mega Man 3, Final Fantasy. Mm-hmm. Like, these were all games that... So they, like... You know, I remember playing all of those games. So
tough competition.
It is tough competition, especially back then when games were, they were probably like 80, 90 bucks for those NES games back then.
And those, you know, outside of Final Fantasy being sequels too, you already sort of have those fan bases. Obviously, Mario 3, like, Mario is so huge, and even Mega Man, a monstrous game. So definitely a crowded year to come out. And, you know, especially, I can't speak, you know, I was born in 89, so this is not something I was around for when it came out, but I would imagine the hype levels around a Final Fantasy coming to the States, you know, was, you know, for people locked in, was probably like, oh man, we're ready for this game, where, you know, this game doesn't really have that kind of, you know, prestige coming from, you know, Japan, where, you know, Final Fantasy obviously was a really big hit.
I mean, there's a lot of other games from 1990 as well. Like, I mean, David, you pointed out a few of those, but like Star Tropics, we already did an episode on that. Dr. Mario, Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers was a pretty good licensed game.
Yeah.
Ninja Gaiden 2, Adventures of Lolo 2, Little Nemo. Like, it was a huge year for the NES, right? Like, kind of, it felt a little bit like, at least in North America, it's, you know, the big bang, it's the console going out with the big bang before the Super Nintendo releases in the next year. And so, maybe it's possible Crystalis kind of gets lost in that shuffle, even though I think it does have a kind of a cult classic following nowadays.
It's probably peak NES, I would say, that 1990. I know we haven't pulled this out in a while. I don't know if we've even used it more than once, but I think a good way to organize our thoughts on Crystalis will be to pull out the old good, bad, and the ugly segment. So...
The good, the bad, and the ugly.
We will start. We'll start with the good, and we've mentioned a few things. And the first being that the combat's pretty. Like, other than the hit detection, that's kind of off a little bit. The combat is generally pretty fun.
Yeah, I like the idea of being able to charge the weapon. I think the spells work pretty well. The healing spell is obviously very, very useful. Changing out the swords doesn't take all that much effort, and then you can tell when you hit things. It's the feel like when you're looking at the screen, the reach of the sword compared to where the enemy is, does feel like there's a little bit of a gap there, right? And it's also very easy to be hit by enemies because some of them kind of run at you or move in kind of funny patterns and stuff like that. So it's definitely challenging, but I think the combat itself, once you get the hang of it, works pretty well.
Yeah, and I felt like sometimes it was sort of easy if you got hit once. Like, uh-oh, you're going to be in for a couple of hits, you know what I mean? Like, sort of, back to back to back. But, yeah, I thought the combat, not bad. You know, I wouldn't say it was, like the biggest selling point of the game. But, like you said, more often than not, it got the job done. You know, some little frustrating things, but, you know, something you're going to be doing a lot. like we were saying before, you're going to have to grind and kill enemies. And it is nice, though, when you sort of have, like, all right, I grinded out, I got that level, and then, like, immediately you're seeing the fruits of your labor, right? Because it's like, oh, man, now that enemy that used to take two power, you know, charge sword shots, now is only dropping with one, you know, which to me is always a good feeling.
Yeah, the progression is really good in this game. Like, when you level up, you feel, you clearly feel more powerful, right? Like, you see the change in the health and the magic meter, maybe even from the amount of damage you would take from an enemy. But your power is very clearly defined. Like, you know that now an enemy that took three hits will take two or five to three or something like that. Like, that's kind of a... There's no damage numbers, but I don't think enemies take that many hits, really. So, the effect of a level up is quite tangible, I guess. I like that element.
I also really like on your little UI at the bottom of your screen, you know, that life force... And I know they're two different gauges, but every time I'd just be looking over there, I'd be like, oh, I'm powering up my life force, baby.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's good. It's a really clear UI, and it shows you everything you need to know. Like, you don't really have to hit the start menu to find out any information. Like, you see how much experience you have, how much you need to the next level up, how much gold you have, your life, mana, I guess the... Does it show you what item you have equipped at the time?
I don't think so.
I can't remember. Okay, so that's the one thing that might be missing from there. But still a very good display of information.
Yeah, I did a lot of run and gunning. My strategy for the most part was to charge up the sword and just fire from afar.
Yeah, that's what I would do a lot too.
Until I got stronger, like if I went to a new area and the enemies were particularly tough, like that's a good way to stay safe is just to try to level up once or twice from range. And then when you're stronger and it only takes a couple of melee hits, then you can go in for the quick kills.
Yeah, and then we talked about it a little bit, but the soundtrack was quite good. I looked up the composer as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and it's funny, the composer's name is Yoko Osaka. Not a whole lot of credits under the... Like, there was basically... Worked at SNK, like pretty much everything on here seems to be an SNK game. Started doing music in 1988, I believe. Touchdown Fever. There's a few. Well, there's like four. He was busy. You got Fighting Soccer, Guerrilla War, POW, Prisoners of War, and Touchdown Fever. So that was the first year, and then the last credit seems to be in 1994 with a sound credit for Top Hunter. So. Got about 10 games to their name or so. Fatal Fury and Fatal Fury 2 are on there. I'm pretty sure that they're known for having decent soundtracks as well.
Yeah, fighting games usually do. I don't know a lot about that series, but yeah, I guess that's kind of funny. Maybe they moved on to a different field or something like that, or
Lightning Struck.
I don't know. Yeah, yeah. They did well in the stock market based on the success of Crystallis. I don't know. I did want to highlight one more good mechanic that I really liked was the teleportation, the magic in general. Like, you get a lot of different spells. The healing one is obviously a really good default one, but the ability to teleport from one town to the next, like, Not something you, again, not something I really remember from an NES game. Like Final Fantasy didn't have that, I don't think. I don't think the Dragon Warrior games had that, the NES ones. And then, yeah, obviously Zelda had the warp whistle, I suppose, but that much smaller world than that of Crystalis. So, yeah, and kudos to them for, I guess, really making this feel like a full, large, filled with content kind of action RPG. Like, it feels like a big game. It feels like there's a lot to do.
For sure.
And I guess that we can move on to the bad, what we didn't like about it. Was Perry, was there anything particularly egregious that hampered your gameplay a bit?
This is kind of like it's kind of a small thing, but it's a constant thing, which is the movement speed. Like, I in theory, I love how quick the character is. Mm-hmm. But when you're moving around and, you know, you're getting attacked by enemies or enemies can come out, it's kind of this, like, kind of like it gives me like an anxious feeling of like I'm moving a little too fast. Like, I'm moving like if my speed was a 10, I wish I was going like an 8, because it's like, it's just where in the where you are at the screen, I feel like you kind of have to be really cautious. So funnily enough, I think I think the movement, and I think you know, the size of the screen would like literally in the resolution, just how it is. Like, if this game was remade in a widescreen, it probably would be like perfect. But I don't know, that just stood out to me. And I kind of, every time as I played it, it was just like,
Yeah, okay. Dude, it's funny you say that, because I remember distinctly one spot I was running, and it was pretty early on. It was leading up to the windmill. So very early on in the game, and it's pretty just a straight sort of, like, you know, pretty easy to navigate tunnel. And like, yeah, when you're running to the left, instead of you being in the center and like seeing, you know, equal sides, you almost end up going more towards the side you're pushing at. Like, so yeah, like the quickness and you're almost felt like, oh man, something could come out of that, you know, that side of the screen and be pretty much all up in my business pretty darn quick.
Well, that was the Secret of Mana thing that I didn't like too. It was that you get too close to the edge and then, yeah, an enemy hits you like out of nowhere.
Yeah, no good.
Was everyone using the D-pad or did anyone use Joy-Con?
I used the Pro controller. So I think I was actually using the stick because the D-pad's so bad.
Yeah, I was using, so I was playing on my Switch Lite, so I was using the D-pad. Always felt great. Like, it controls, I think it still controls really well. Like, obviously, that Switch Lite D-pad is pretty good for these NES games.
Now, I was just using my, I was playing handheld, but I just using the D-pad on the Joy-Con, which usually I'm not a fan of, like, the button style, but it felt all right on this one. But yeah, I'm kind of with Perry, where I guess I was expecting it to be slower too. Maybe it's like a thing of expectations versus reality, where like some of these old games you move, there's a speed that you're kind of used to. I'm also curious if there was any change, like if we were to play this on the original NES, would that be the movement speed on like a CRT screen, or if there's a bit of lost in translation when it like becomes emulated on the Switch, if the speed is a little bit off. Like, I know we've seen that in like old Mario games where the speed is just a little bit different. Like, even in the Mario 35, it doesn't quite feel like the old NES Mario movement. Like, it seems like they've made some changes there.
I think it's funny with an action RPG like this. I guess maybe, I mean, you guys mentioned some other games, like definitely Zelda feels slow. Both Zeldas feel slower than this game. Like, you're moving at such a fast pace that I thought it added to the flow of the game. I get it that you might not always know where to go or what to do, but it doesn't take long to backtrack or to go to new places. I guess that's kind of a good thing, that even if you get confused or you're trying to figure out where to go through trial and error, you can get to where you the different things to try pretty quickly, you know. So that I thought, yeah, it's kind of a plus out of a bad thing, I guess.
Yeah, I guess there's not usually a whole lot of enemies like on the screen at one time either, so it's easy enough to, if you're on the way to somewhere, to avoid.
You can just walk around.
Just walk around them.
Yeah, even, yeah, I was gonna say you can even get pretty close to them and scoot right on by, I feel like, but yeah.
Yeah, I think the other thing that we mentioned that comes under the bad category would be the combat of like timing the hits or the hit detection. There's definitely, again, don't know if this is something that just didn't translate as well going from CRT to the Switch screen, but it just seemed like it was off by a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know if it's necessarily a part of the emulation, because I was watching a speedrun of this game, and I believe the speedrunner was playing on the original NES hardware, and he had mentioned like the timing on the sword attack, and I think it has something to do with the you press the button and you don't attack, the sword doesn't come out like right away. I think there's like a slight input delay there, and so if that's happening on original hardware and this one. It's just a matter of, you know, kind of getting used to that and knowing that every time you go into a combat situation, you have to take that the button pressing or the timing into account. Like you can't just, it's not going to feel like that. That's where it really does feel different from something like Secret of Mana or the original Legend of Zelda. The timing and the attack, the combat in those games feels really smooth. You know, just it still works, still holds up super well today. But here, yeah, a little bit trickier.
Get into the ugly. I had a couple, not terribly ugly, but the biggest ugly for me, I think, was the inventory management. I believe there was like two menu screens that I kept flipping, like always forgetting which one was like which button triggered which one, and then
like start and select.
Yeah, and then trying to like, and then when you get into the equipment, I just felt it was very clunky trying to be like, okay, like what. Did I equip this item? Did I not? Like which sort of? It just, I don't know. Like obviously it's an old game and you know they can only do so much. But I just felt like the menu system was one of the weaker systems that they had in this one.
Yeah, I can agree with that. And I see you have this sort of written down too about having to sort of grind it out. Right, we had mentioned like you can actually sort of get into spots. Or I think actually Jordan wrote that down. You can get into spots where like you can't actually do damage, and you sort of pin yourself in a bad spot. The game, I like even when I first started, I went out of town without speaking to everyone, so I didn't get the sword right away. Because normally I feel like something would stop you, right? Like, hey, like why don't you go, you know, figure something else out before going out? But they let you just go right out into the world, and I was like, I don't have anything. I was like, I must have missed something, but. For me, I guess just having, I want to say, like, I'm trying to think, the tuning of how much experience, maybe to how many monsters you kill, or vice versa, it just seems like, the whole grinding thing, like, you could go through, kill every enemy you see on the way to one objective, and, like, you wouldn't even be close to leveling. Like, you, like, it is absolutely required to, like, leave a screen, come back, for the sole purpose of killing enemies, which it's like not, you know, the worst thing in the world, but I feel like you should almost have put either more enemies down in the way. So it's like, oh, well, if you kill all of these, you will more or less sort of be close to where you should be level wise. You know, maybe like, oh, maybe you got to come back and kill a few extra, but it just that or where the ones you do kill give more experience just because I don't know. It seemed very much like unbalanced in the sense of just like, hey, I've killed everything in front of me, and I'm like still barely scratching the surface to a new level.
Yeah, I mean, it should offer like, you know, like maybe a hidden area with a tougher, you know, boss or enemy that can give you the points that maybe it's your reward for exploring out. But yeah, just get to A to B, hit the enemies, walk off the screen, do it again. I mean, it's just, it's old school and doesn't age very well.
Well, I don't understand the point of gating a boss with a level anyway. Like, I spent 10 minutes firing sword blasts at the one boss in the swamp. And I was level 3, and I couldn't tell him, like, I don't think I'm hurting. Like, I don't even think I'm damaging this guy. And had to go to the guide and be like, is there something I'm missing? Like, am I not hitting the right spot of the boss? Like, there's no other place I can hit. Like, the only place I can hit him is directly in the face. So I went and looked, and it's like, no, you have to be level 4 to even damage him. And it's like, oh, like, nothing. There's really nothing to tell you that other than the futility of never actually damaging the boss. Like, it's not like you could walk away and be like, well, maybe I got the wrong weapon. Because I get, that was the other thing too, is I believe you needed the fire sword. Like, the game actually tells you, oh, you need this sword to damage the boss. And I'm like, okay, I got the sword. And then when you put that one in with like not quite knowing if you're actually equipping it. So I'm like, is the flame sword equipped? Like, what's the problem? So then I had to actually leave that dungeon area there and spend like 10 minutes grinding on the enemies outside trying to get to level 4. And then when I went and fought the guy, the boss was pretty pitiful, really, by the time I hit level 4.
You were used to his untouchable form.
Yeah, maybe that's the thing, is I got so used to the timing of his blasts that it only took like 10 seconds to off the boss. But I just... I don't know if it's like, we need to force the player to be prepared for later in the game, but it's like, just let me get my butt kicked later in the game and then I'll grind or something. Like, the actual gating of not being able to actually do any damage, I think, was unnecessary.
Yeah, it's funny that you have a game like this where it's not that the bosses provide a challenge, it's that you have to be the right level to fight them. And it's more like solving kind of like where to go next. You're solving little puzzles about what people are saying in the villages. Like, you definitely have to talk to everybody. There's only a few, there's at least only one instance I can remember where you actually are gated off and it's near the swamp. You're supposed to go to the north to this little hut or this little house there, but you can't actually go there unless you're a high enough level. So the game, in some spots, I think it does stop you from progressing based on not having enough level, rather than just sending you to a boss fight that you can't actually win, which is kind of stupid. I certainly can't complain about that. Like, I wish that maybe the enemies offered more experience or there were more of them. Those are good points. At the very least, there is good enemy variety. Like, I feel like every different place you go, there's a lot of different minions to fight. Like, the dungeons are quite boring, actually. They're quite maze-like, and they just kind of have the same look to them, right? Like, they're all kind of just like paths and forks and crosses that you have to turn left or turn right, and then they all just kind of different. They might just have a different color palette, but they're all pretty much the same. But at the very least, it's different enemies that you encounter in each one, and they might have ranged attacks or they might poison you or something like that. So you have to be kind of learning about different enemies as you go along. So that I'll give them credit for variety in terms of the lesser enemies.
Yeah, I think the one thing about the game that does for me too is it's going to be funny to say this because this is an SNK game, but playing an SNK game from that time makes me appreciate how well Nintendo has always kind of been able to have that way of making games feel good. Like, with like, when you think of like The Legend of Zelda, like the way the combat feels so good there, and it's like it kind of makes those games more special to me, because it's like, okay, like these, there's just like the je ne sais quoi of like this feels good, like the combat feels good, the dungeons are interesting, it's I don't know, it just it kind of, you know, the Crystalis to me was it was fun playing it for what it was and that sort of stuff. I certainly wouldn't put it in like a must play for anyone. Like, it's more of a curiosity, I think. But for me, my kind of lasting impression was is that, man, like Nintendo really nailed it back then. Like they really knew what they were doing.
Yes, exactly. Mm. Yeah.
Some might argue they still know what they're doing.
Yeah.
not in 2020.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, David, I thought you were
17.
Oh yeah, we need a repeat of that next year. Yeah. David, I was going to say, I thought you might like the post-apocalyptic setting of the game, or at least the setup of the game.
Yeah.
Right, you emerge from this hyperbaric or cryogenic chamber after 100 years after this great war, and that's kind of how the game starts with the main character. I think they're nameless, but yeah, again, not something we really saw a lot of on the NES console. We would see it in PC games. Chrono Trigger has kind of something like that when you go to the future, but yeah, neat kind of setup. I think it's a pretty fun game. I think there's a lot to it if you're willing to invest. I would say don't be afraid to use a guide if you're going to play this game, because it can get pretty obtuse, and it's worth knowing like what level you need to be to fight certain bosses so that you don't get stuck. But just one last thing for me in terms of the version. So I played the SNK Collection version. And some really cool things about that are the rewind feature, which you have in the NES game, but there's also the ability in the SNK Collection to watch a playthrough of the game and just hop in wherever you want. So what happened to me was I played about an hour, and then for whatever reason, I didn't save my progress, and I shut the game down. I can't remember. I thought I saved my progress in the game, but I didn't actually make a save state in the collection version or the collection main menu. So I lost my progress there, but it was very easy to just start a playthrough that I was viewing, fast forward it about an hour to where I'd left off, and you can actually just start playing from that point. So I thought that was pretty cool. Like, and again, if you didn't want to play through the whole game, you could just play through certain parts through this recorded playthrough that the SNK Collection has. So I love stuff like that. I think a lot of the other games in the SNK Collection might have that feature as well. So just a really cool thing to highlight that developers put into a collection. Like, I've reviewed a bunch of collections for NWR, and a lot of them don't have half of the features that this SNK Collection does. So, you know, props to the team who put that together. Really, really kind of feature full.
Yeah, that's a very neat
version of these games.
Original feature.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how difficult that is to implement into a game, but man, I was so happy to have it, and I think it's just really cool.
Yeah, do Casey or Perry have any final thoughts before we move on to Last Call?
Yeah, I mean, I guess like you were sort of saying, it's not a bad game, you know, and I guess, you know, I would go out there and say, yeah, like everyone, this is a must play for any fan, you know, of RPGs or retro gaming or something. But on the other hand, it is free if you are a member of the Switch Online, you know. So, you know, I guess it's not free, but you have access to it if you have Switch Online, which I'm sure a lot of people do. So, you know, it's not bad to go in there and, you know, you could put a half hour, an hour in and sort of get like a real good feeling of what the game is sort of all about. And, you know, then you could sort of elect if you want to continue further or not. But yeah, I mean, an interesting game for sure. And it's sort of cool that they're keeping it alive by bringing it, you know, on the online for more people to check out. So.
Yeah. And I'd pretty much echo everything David said. I mean, exactly.
Well, that takes us into Last Call, and
way before we get to Last Call, I have an interjection to make. Yeah. Because you guys didn't love my choice of Crystallis for this crossover, I demand that one of you three select the next game for the crossover, because I provided a few of them. I think we like Star Tropics pretty well.
Yeah.
Crystallis, I can understand. It definitely feels like more of an acquired taste.
Diablo 1.
Oh, don't even joke about that. I seriously will play that.
I'm not joking.
Okay, can you get Perry to play it? Like, that's the real
I guess,
because
I'm
no,
trying.
He can't.
It's funny, because I think Perry would like it. In like, I don't know. But anyway, I don't know.
If it's fun, I like it.
What can you play on?
You'd have to download it on your computer. or bust out the PS1 if you've got one.
Oh gosh, I would love it if one of us played the PS1 version. I have played that before.
Well, that's,
but tracking that down with the console would be another story.
That's the first way I played it, man. That's my freaking neighbor had a PS1 and Diablo, and him and my brother would play it, and I was like, this is the game I need to play in my life. I need it. Mm-hmm. And they would never let me play, dude, until one day I was in EB Games and I saw it for the computer, and I was like, oh, Mom, please. And for whatever reason, she bought it for me.
I'm not joking at all. Like, I would definitely do a crossover on that game.
I mean, and if we can't get Jerry to play, I think that would still be a really good one because we could all play it together online. Which would be really cool. So
that'd be
fun. Damn, dude.
Sit there and ask you questions.
It's pretty expensive. No, that's the replacement disc. Yeah, actually, Diablo is pretty expensive on PlayStation 1. At least on eBay, it's like 65, 80 bucks plus.
Yeah. Oof. I can't imagine they made too many copies of that game. Like, I don't know if it's as rare as StarCraft 64, but very few people played it on PlayStation, I would imagine.
Oh, you can, so I guess you can get it from Blizzard, right? Like, directly?
That's what I would have guessed.
I think, actually, funny enough, I'm pretty sure Diablo you get through Good Old Games or GOG, right? Or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm looking. No. You can get Diablo plus Hellfire for $10.
That's nothing. So okay, we're doing that. Perry, you should play. It's a seminal title.
Starbucks.
Yeah. That's two soy milk decafs, baby.
I'd have to skip one trip to Starbucks to afford this game. I think I could make that sacrifice.
And it's online. It is online too.
Perry will have to give up one chicken and waffle meal.
I don't know. I think now we're thinking we're asking a little.
Yeah, Perry's like, I won't do it.
Be careful. Can I pay for that meal with Starbucks points?
We'll have to do some wheeling and dealing later on. See if it works out.
Yep.
But if not, we'll think of maybe one that's a Nintendo game. But anyway, regardless, Diablo has to be done at some point.
This evening, drink up, drink up, drink up, and order again. This is the last call for alcohol. Get going.
David, what's last call tonight?
So last call, what got me thinking about it was playing a game on the Nintendo Online service, and then with the release of Mario 3D All-Stars, I got to thinking that I don't know if we're going to get any new systems in the new online service. So that's the last call topic this week. Is there anyone out there that still believes that there's going to be a new system added to the Switch Online? Or is Nintendo just going to drip feed us the odd NES and SNES games until everyone just gives up on the service? Like, not giving up in the sense that we're not going to pay for the service because we need it for the online, but giving up on the idea of, you know, this being a regular thing they're going to be adding to.
Yeah, I'm going with a big old fat no. could there be potential, like, because it's just not happening. Who are we kidding? You know, you're definitely not getting any, like, the only thing I could potentially see come would be if they went N64, which I don't see them doing. I don't see them getting into GameCube or Wii, and it'd really be more of a choice. Like, are they going to bring some of these like Game Boy games over that, you know, that we saw sort of released on the Wii U, something like that? But I'm saying no.
But I would say no, but this whole limited time thing with the 3D All-Stars.
But that's
good
not
point to but that, an N64 online.
See, I could
them
see
releasing Mario.
I see them just piecing that out. That would mean to me would be like, hey,
I guess you're
like,
right. It's still
$15.
If you don't want to buy the full collection, like, don't worry. Now you could buy each for $20 or 20, you know.
No, I know. No, for sure. But I mean, like, if they have a nice new emulator and stuff that they've made and blah, blah, blah. The only thing is that I'm kind of taking into account the like old virtual console, you know, that ecosystem, but that just doesn't exist, right? This is a Netflix system. Yeah. So It's just a stupid system. Let me buy the games I want to buy.
Well, I think...
And let me...
Yeah, like, with the Nintendo 64, like, now that we got Mario 64 in the collection, and like Casey said, I think it'll be probably piecemealed at $20 or $25 later on. And then it's, I'd imagine that we'll probably get something similar to this with, like, Link's, like, Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask, where next year, during the Legend of Zelda anniversary, we'll get a 3D All-Stars or whatever, something similar in the similar vein. So you take those games out of the Nintendo 64, like, they'll obviously not be in a system like that, and then you can't have any of the rare games. Like, what is, that doesn't leave much. Like, it doesn't leave enough that I think they would bother making a Nintendo 64 emulator for. And then, yeah, I don't think GameCube or the Wii they're going to bother with. Like, they've already, like you said, they've got the Mario games off there already as well.
The thing is with a GameCube is that they can release them at, you know...
Well, yeah, that would be the thing. These games for
$30.
Yeah, that's exactly. What I think. That's, yeah,
which I would love.
Yeah, so I don't see any system beyond the Super Nintendo being added into the online system. The only thing that maybe they might do is Game Boy games, but then there's so many Game Boy games that are part of collections that I just don't, like, what games would you put in there? Like, the Final Fantasy Legend games are in collections, like, the Castlevania games are in collections.
Yeah, but Crystalis is in a collection. It's still on there.
They probably just be NES ports.
Yeah. And then when you think of, like, the big games with, like, Link's Awakening, like, they've remastered it, so they're not going to be too worried about sticking that in a service. Like, I just don't see it. I think this is it. I think NES and SNES is it. Like, this is as far as they're going to go. That's my prediction.
Well, hold on. But what are they going to do then with that other backlog of amazing content? What are they going to do with it?
Nothing.
They're not going to do nothing.
It'll one-offs and collections, like, that you have to pay for. I don't foresee them adding another system to give us free games.
Okay, so I've got a take I know Perry's going to agree with. When the Switch Pro comes out, let's say it's next year, next spring, or next summer, they will announce a third, potentially a fourth virtual or Nintendo Switch Online console to coincide with that system. I think it'd be very, very awkward to stop at Nintendo and Super Nintendo when the Wii U had so many different ones, right? The Wii U had NES, Super NES, Game Boy Advance, DS, Wii. If you've got five there, even the 3DS, right? If you consider the ambassador games as well, NES, GBA, Game Boy Color, Super Nintendo, DSiWare. Like, there is this huge back catalog of games that I don't think can just be served exclusively through collections. And we have seen a bunch of games from collections still pop up on these services, right? Crystalis is in the SNK collection, as Perry mentioned. River City Ransom is in the Kunio-kun collection, right? Like, I don't think that games and collections will completely deter Nintendo from wanting to do this. And also, Nintendo has mostly shied away from doing collections of their own games. I know we just got the 3D All-Stars, and then obviously we have the Mario All-Stars, which came to the Super Nintendo catalog. But Nintendo doesn't do a ton of collections, right? Like, this does seem like a good place for... I mean, Game Boy still got my vote. I don't know if that's the number one, but I'd be shocked if we didn't get at least N64. And what I would really hope for is all of the Game Boys, right? Like, if Nintendo's never going to make another dedicated handheld, if the Switch is it, how can you leave Game Boy, Game Boy Color, Game Boy Advance games just trapped in the past, right?
Well,
they're not really getting remastered. And name a Game Boy Advance game in a collection in 2020.
The Game Boy Advance is like the GameCube of handhelds. It just has so many good games on it.
Give me an Advance Wars collection right now. I will give you any amount of money for it.
Dude.
But well, I was going to say...
But that's the problem, though.
Yes,
because Jordan, you will pay for it. So why would they give it to you for free?
Because mm-hmm. they're not making it.
But if they do make it, they're going to make you pay for it. They're not going to do it for free.
Well, then, how about they... Okay, so that brings me to this, then. I could see them doing... Returning a virtual console, not calling it that, but maybe. But coming back...
A new virtual console.
There you go.
Yeah. I could see that.
No, but I mean, they do that
because
they have the NES, they have the Super NES. Those are givens. But let's do a new one where 64 games are $6 now or $5.
Yeah, I was going to say, then they do, I think with N64, no way that goes on the freebies, because first off, there are not that many great games on N64 worth bringing over, right? And say they're not going to be like, yeah.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I mean,
that they're going to bring
at least 30, right?
I don't know, dude. What I'm saying is
not if more. I obviously, mean, you need to include non first party.
Can you name 10?
They're not putting Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask on there because, like you said, I could see something with that going on next year with the collection. But there's just not that many great N64 games. So say they like, oh yeah, let's make this N64 thing for free, and we'll bring, you know, 6 games over. And then why aren't you bringing more N64 games over? Where are the other N64 games?
I don't agree. I mean, I think that you have that, you're saying that they're not going to do that because of the Zelda collection. I think that they could totally do that with the Mario 64, put it on there for you know, for $10.
But you're not, you are misconstruing the question here. The question is, what would be coming to Nintendo Switch Online for free? N64 games maybe coming for paysies? You know, I could, you know, I wouldn't rule
as a
that
unified
out
system.
Like, but I'm not, like, we're talking about, oh, you
yeah
have online here.
No,
free
yeah
games.
I think it's yeah.
Hold
it's
on, let's split the difference here. What about this? What if they introduced a new tier to the subscription? Right, they're trying to get all these people to subscribe. They want more people in this ecosystem, a la Game Pass. Obviously, you know, it's not offering the same kind of value, but they want to increase the value of a subscription. Okay, they could increase it literally by increasing the price, like Netflix has been doing, right? Netflix has different tiers. If you want 4K, if you want more streams on Netflix, you have to pay more money for that. What if they introduce like a $5, an extra $5 or $10 to the normal subscription price? But hey, you're gonna get N64 games. You're gonna get Game Boy Color games, and those are exclusive to holders of like Nintendo Switch Online Deluxe Pro account.
No,
I don't know what the hell they're gonna call it. It's gonna be a lot of.
They're not going to create tiers of online service. Like they barely make
it's a fractured audience, yeah, you know.
Plus there's a level of expectation where, hey, I'm paying $10 extra and you gave me 2 N64 games this year and they suck. And you gave me, you know what I mean? Like, then people are up
my final
arms.
My final offer. Yeah. With the release of the Switch Pro, they announce an increase to the price of the Nintendo Switch Online subscription service. However, to satiate people, to make it so that people aren't upset about the price increase, we're also going to throw in 2 extra consoles. So it's going to jump from, like, what is it, like $20 a year to $30. The family price will go from, like, $40 to $60. But everyone's going to get 2 more consoles out of it.
Is one of the consoles the actual Nintendo Switch app? And they'll just rebrand that and put Mario Run on it?
Yeah.
God, I hope not. Don't. Please,
yeah,
don't.
I don't think that's happening. I think the likely thing, if they do anything, is when the Switch Pro launches and they announce the reemergence of the virtual, or what do you call it, the virtual console. I think that's the best case scenario, is that there's a version of the virtual console where the games are like $5 or $10 a piece, and you got to buy them piecemeal. I don't think.
But they've never made money on virtual console. I don't think they're going back to that. I think as soon as they went to Netflix subscription for NES and Super NES, that's them drawing the line in the sand. Like, we're never going back.
What percentage?
Believe me, I love virtual console. Like, I want it. I would kill to have it back. But it doesn't make money.
What percentage of people
they make money through subscriptions?
But do you think that the percentage of people buying the Nintendo Online service are buying it because they want access to the old games, or are they just buying it because they want to be able to play online? Because I think it's probably like maybe 10% of the people that bought. I think that might be a high.
Seems generous.
Yeah, that's generous. I think it could be closer to 5% or less of the people that buy the Nintendo Online service are getting it for those games. I think 95 or more are just absolutely getting it because they want to play online.
But those percentages you just gave are the exact same numbers for people who would buy games on virtual console.
Yeah.
So now you just want to make sure people stay subscribed. There's not even that many games on Switch that you want to play online, right? Like Splatoon's kind of done. Yeah. I guess you can play Mario Kart. Like there's a fair number of games that you don't even need the subscription to play. Like,
I mean, does Fortnite even need online?
No, I don't think
so. I don't know. It wouldn't, right?
And that's so, the only thing I play online.
Yeah. My
there you go, right? Like
Animal Crossing, I guess.
My prediction is nothing comes. There's no new systems, there's no virtual consoles.
Well, no. I think that you kind of what we just played out in the math. I think it's just going to be games like coming like Final Fantasy VII. Just coming back, and it's not a unified system. And they're only picking games that they know will sell, and people who want them will buy them, and then collections and stuff. I just don't think it makes any sense any other way. Unfortunately, I mean, I would love it, but also I would love a GameCube virtual console. That would be Perry's dream. But, and Casey promised me in 2017. He said, "There's no doubt." that the Switch is going to launch. Like, there's not any doubt
flipping
in the world.
And I'm flopping, dude. There's no way we get a virtual console. And I tell you what, man, even if they, like, the funny thing is we argue about this, right? If Nintendo was like, guys, next month we're bringing N64 games to the console, everyone would be like, oh my God, this is amazing. And we'd all log on, and we'd put 5 minutes into one of the games that were
Donkey
released
Kong 64
on it.
Is what it would be.
And
stop.
Then we'd be like,
just
dude,
stop.
That was
Donkey
so good.
Kong 64
I can't wait
and maybe
to play
Quest
some
64.
More later. And then
Diddy Kong Racing.
I would play so much Smash Bros. 64. You have no idea.
There's not a chance that Smash Bros. Is one of those games. Not a chance.
If they brought N64 games to Switch, Smash Bros. Would 1,000%
no,
be one
they'll,
of those games.
They'll yeah. stick that in. They'll of make course. You pay extra for that. I guarantee it. That will be.
See, that's a game you actually wouldn't mind spending $10 on.
If you imagine if they added online to that game,
it would suck.
Oh, I'd be over the moon. I'd be over the moon.
Don't they need to fix the Super Smash Bros. Yes, online suck, before yeah. they could get that to work?
They need to fix all of their online. So
David?
If they need to fix their online, this is why they're going to charge more price for the subscription. But they're not going to tell people. We're not going to tell people we're raising the price because it sucks. Because we your internet connection with our, you have to have the wired connection. They're going to tell people we're raising the price because you're getting N64 games now. That's it's the excuse to raise the price.
True.
It's not that people are going to subscribe to get those games. It's the justification so they look good.
You're more optimistic than I.
Honestly, I mean, I'm totally torn in the middle. Where I'm just going to say it's not going to happen, but I could just totally see that N64 app on there. I really could. And I could see exactly what you just said. They're raising the price and, oh no, oh dear. But guess what? N64, I really could see that happen. I hope that does
Absolutely.
Happen.
All I know is
that would be cool.
Jordan speaks like a man whose football team is 5-0.
That's right. Nothing but confidence over here. We're just throwing Hail Marys here, okay? I'm hopeful for everything
and
right
see,
now.
See, for you, you're used to those Hail Marys being completed for long touchdowns. Well, let me bring you back down to earth, man. It sucks.
Joe Flacco
it
and Frank
sucks.
Gore.
It sucks. Okay. And if we blow it up.
Just to finalize it, I just want to ask Jordan. I want you to tell me your top Nintendo 64 game that doesn't include... Link, Mario, or a rare developed game?
My favorite N64 game that doesn't involve those characters?
Yeah.
Mischief Makers is really good. I liked... not a rare game, so I can't say Conker's Bad Fur Day.
Can't say Diddy Kong's Racing.
Yeah, God, that's another really good one.
It's not Diddy Kong's race. It's Diddy's.
Because whatever
Kong
you
racing.
Name here is what that is what would be in it. Because it's not going to be a rare game, and it's not going to be a Nintendo or a Link or Mario game. So you got to.
They are going to put the Link in Mario games.
Yeah, that's
Golden
a rare game
too.
It's not going to be in
true.
There.
Yeah. Pokemon Stadium and Pokemon Snap. Obviously, we're getting a remake or re-release of that in some form.
Kirby.
Pokemon Stadium games.
Yoshi.
Yeah, Kirby. Yoshi's Story, yeah, it's okay. I'm not a huge fan of that one.
I'm just trying to think of other games.
I know, yeah.
I don't know, Perry. You told me there were at least 30 of them.
Oh, David, you'll like this.
Well, there are, but you're not letting me use Mario.
Oh, that's got to be in Mario Party 2, though.
Mario Party 2, Mario Party 3.
And the wrestling games as well, obviously, would be very good.
Mario Kart would be amazing. Dude, Mario Kart 64 is amazing. Mario Kart 64 is amazing.
David, half of the games have Mario in them. Even if they're not like necessarily collection worthy. Like Pokemon Mario Kart 64 Snap is not going to be a collection. But
yeah, I don't know. I don't Pokemon see it happening. Stadium, there's just Pokemon Stadium 2. So much licensing hell in the Nintendo 64.
F-Zero.
So
guys, F-Zero, Star Fox 64.
Yeah, Perry, you're giving the reason why they would do it. Because many of the N64 games that are really good are first party games.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So you've got I don't know why you already own the IP. Just why not do it?
Well, I don't know why that has to be a caveat. Well, name other games that aren't first party. Well, they're not going to, I mean, that doesn't matter.
N64 was Rare and it was first party. And that's really all you needed, right? There were some other games that were fun, but those made up the bulk of the enjoyable experiences on that console. It's just the way it was.
So many people just dropped $60 on 3D Mario Collection so that they could get Super Mario 64. And imagine if 6 months later, Nintendo says, hey, it's for free now.
Yeah, well, that's why they're probably not going to sell it after March, right? Like, exactly. It wouldn't stand to reason.
Exactly. They're going
to
sell it.
There has to be some...
They're going to sell it, boys.
Yeah, there's no chance it's going to be free.
Piecemeal.
There'd be so many people upset that they just dropped $60 and they could have waited for free.
No, it's not free. It'll be 20 or 25 bucks or something.
Mario 64, it can't be 20 bucks.
That'll be 15 to 20. And then
has to be 10.
Sunshine will be 30. And same with Galaxy.
It can't be higher. It can't be higher than the price of the collection.
Get the collection as a bargain, and then if you didn't do that,
no,
and
it'll
you're
be
some
10,
sort
20,
of
and 30.
Jam, then you got to pay.
It'll
the
be
Piper
10, 20,
boys.
And 30.
10, 20, and 30 makes sense. But 30 for Galaxy when it was 20. What was it?
20 exactly. It'll be 10, 20, 20.
Yeah. I think 10, 20, 20 makes sense, yes.
So the early adopters paid $10 more.
They paid $10 for the sound test.
For the physical copy. That's probably what's going
to
be.
Anyway, guys, I unfortunately do have to get Gideon up.
Let me hit you out of here with the outro. Thanks, Perry. You're right. But we were having too much fun speculating. We just need to do more speculation episodes. They're so much fun. So I get that takes to the end of our episode about Crystalis and football and N64 and virtual console and a lot of other things. But you know, we always and chicken and waffles
all encompassing.
We always go off on tangents when we're joined by two fun friends from Talking Nintendo podcast. So thank you, gentlemen, for joining us. Always a pleasure to have you on. We need to do keep up the crossovers more regularly because they're such a good time.
Definitely.
Agreed.
Yep.
Cool. So we'll brainstorm a little bit whether we can get Perry to play Diablo or I can get everybody else to join me for Zelda 2, one of my favorite Zelda games. David, do you want to go through the Patreon details quickly?
Yeah, so really quickly, we got the three tiers. We have the Warrior class, which is $2 a month, which gets you access to a private Discord channel where you can help make decisions on what games are covered and what topics are covered and that sort of thing. You also get early access to the episodes. The next two classes up are the White Mage and the Black Mage, which are $5 and $10 respectively. The White Mage class gets those existing benefits, plus you also get access to free games. So these could be review codes that come in for new games. These could be old retro games that we have physical copies for that we'll mail out. Could be anything. Could be giveaways. Could be anything that we get our hands on. And the Black Mage class is the $10 a month. It gets you all of those things plus producer credit on the stuff that we produce. So you would see your name in the credits of your YouTube videos. So if you'd like more details on how it exactly works, you can check us out on patreon.com/thethirstymage, or you can head over to the Discord channel and you can talk to existing patrons to see what the experience is like, or you could just ask us questions direct and we will give you all the information to help make your decision.
Fantastic. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the Thirsty Mage podcast on your app of choice. Leave us a 5-star review. That would be awesome. While you're there, subscribe to the Talk Nintendo podcast. Leave them a 5-star review as well. Casey and Perry, where can people find you on Twitter or anywhere else if they want to get at you?
Sure. Yeah. On Twitter, we are Talk Nintendo Pod. That is Talk Nintendo.
P-O-D.
Boom. And yeah.
And you guys are always posting when new episodes come out. I think those are, is it Tuesday?
We record Tuesday.
We record on Tuesday, come out on Thursday, right? Cool. Yeah, so definitely check out the Talk Nintendo podcast if you haven't already. Follow them on Twitter. Follow the Thirsty Mage on Twitter, where we're posting episodes, but also links to reviews, YouTube videos, and stuff like that, too. That's at the Thirsty Mage. That'll do us for this week. Thank you to everyone for listening. Thanks to Casey and Perry for joining us. And we will talk to you again very soon. I think we're covering E's Origin next week. Casey should be back for that one as well. It's one of his favorite series. So can't wait to talk about that game with David and Casey. But that's it, everybody. Talk to you soon. Have a good night. Bye.
Oakley-dokley.
Adios-ski.
Bye.